And welcome to Gillespie on FTRradio.com. I am your host, Josh Gillespie. With me, as always, is my co-host, Christy Kelly, and the man who makes the show run, except when I record it on Skype, Mike Jazierski. Mark Warner is on, I like to call it assignment, or he's just banished. One of the two. He's working for some other guy today. So he is not going to be with us tonight. But I want you guys to stick around, because we have a really good show tonight. We're continuing our conversation, sort of, so to speak, that we had with Mark last week when he was in Washington, D.C., on the 9/12 March. We're continuing that conversation this week with Greg Fettig, who spoke at the 9/12 March. And is the co-founder of the Hoosier Patriots. He's going to have a lot to say, and we're going to be discussing quite a bit the Tea Party, as it's been in the news, obviously, quite a bit with the shocking win of Christine O'Donnell in Delaware. The Tea Party is making its presence known, and it's going to be our topic of discussion today. But to kind of get on that path, we want to talk a little bit about history. And on December 16th, 1773, protesters in the British colonial capital of Boston decided that they had had enough of the British crown's repeated attempts to increase taxes on its then-loyal subjects. They got so fed up that on that evening, a group of men boarded three ships in Boston Harbor and dumped 342 chests of tea overboard. The passion that was ignited that day helped to spark what became the American Revolution. We've had over 230 years to debate and discuss the meaning behind the protests that literally shocked a nation and set the American Revolution on its course. Even so, many historians have continued to debate both the cause and the meaning of that day. I'm guessing it won't take 230 years to decipher what this current version of the Tea Party is about or what its impact will be. Basic economics, not to mention common sense, tells us that no government can function very long while spending more than it is taking in, at least if that government doesn't want to become Zimbabwe. Unfortunately, in this country, our own government, under the leadership of both Republicans and Democrats, has grown complacent about massive increases in spending and has blatantly ignored the coming day of reckoning. So what's a fed-up populace to do when faced with a coming fiscal calamity, along with a political class that appears to ignore both the problem and the constituents it represents? Why, throw a Tea Party, of course. Despite the platform that the two major parties in this nation have, we've always had smaller parties pop up here and there, albeit with short lifespans and a limited impact in general. Consider that since Teddy Roosevelt's ill-fated presidential run in 1912 for the Bull Moose Party, which he founded, no other third party has placed higher than second in a presidential election. Yes, there has been no shortage of groups on each fringe who felt that their views weren't adequately represented, and who then decided that forming their own party would have the most impact. Such a thing has gone on since the very first political parties were formed in our nation over the strenuous objection of President George Washington. On the right side of the spectrum, we have our friends in the Libertarian Party, which has been in formal existence since 1972 or so. Since then, they've elected, well, nobody really, with the exception of a few nonpartisan elections and other states where fusion voting was in place. They've really not managed to get anyone elected in nearly 40 years of existence. While they will certainly argue that a significant percentage of Americans sympathize with their views, heck, I'll admit to having some small L libertarian leanings, the fact of the matter is they've been wholly ineffective as an actual political organization on almost every single level of elected government. I'm not trying to insult or demean anyone who is a member, including several of my good friends. It's just simply a statement of fact. But you see, that's what makes this new movement so interesting and compelling for a political junkie like me, and most likely those of you listening. Here, you have what appears to be a completely spontaneous collection of grassroots political activists who've somehow been able to come together, get organized, and become an incredibly effective political movement in this country. And after just a couple of years in existence, we are seeing self-identified Tea Party candidates all across the nation winning primaries and elections right off the bat, taking on and knocking off some of the so-called establishment in the process. Yes, I know that the Tea Party movement isn't an actual organized party, at least on the national level. If they were, they wouldn't be running in Republican primaries. But wouldn't you agree that this fact makes their existence and success that much more compelling, regardless of how you may feel about some of their particular candidates? Yet therein lies the rub. While a number of legitimate and respectable candidates can trace their very existence to the support of local Tea Party groups, candidates such as Marco Rubio of Florida, Joe Miller of Alaska, Sharon Engel of Nevada, for example, there are also a number of candidates who I would consider, shall we say, are slightly askew, who've popped up on the scene as a result of this mad rush to take on the establishment. While I'm certainly not the one who's been anointed to decide the legitimacy of any candidate, though I'm tempted to do so with Indiana's 7th District candidate, Marvin Scott, I'll also admit to being a little uncomfortable with a background of a few prominent Tea Party-supported Republican candidates. I mean, how can we claim the mantle of fiscal conservatism when we heartily support a Senate candidate who can't pay her own mortgage or student loans and has no visible means of support and who has had no visible means of support for several years, as in the case of Christine O'Donnell in Delaware? Her frequent utterances regarding some social issues, including a word that won't ever be mentioned on this show, a brief dalliance with witchcraft, and an unwillingness to discuss her own biography are well below the standard I would expect from a potential U.S. senator. While I'm certainly no fan of the type of Republican represented by Congressman Mike Castle, I struggle to muster any support for the flaky Miss O'Donnell either, although, because she is a Republican, I will in the general. But on top of this concern, I have with what appears to be a lack of political sophistication on the part of some of my Tea Party friends. They immediately embraced a little-known pickup-driving state senator in the People's Republic of Massachusetts, who is running the ultimate underdog campaign in an attempt to replace Ted Kennedy in the U.S. Senate. Scott Brown rather masterfully accepted the mantle of a hero fighting the dark forces of liberalism, when in reality, his voting record in the state Senate and in D.C. since being elected has been one of a moderate Republican, one quite at home in the Northeast, but not what you would expect to come from the ranks of the Tea Party movement. While I certainly can't fault Senator Brown for skillfully using the movement to propel himself into a Senate seat, I do question why Tea Party supporters willingly overlooked a fairly moderate voting record and views in Brown's case, yet accepted the kookiness of Christine O'Donnell simply because she said the right things and became a friend of Sarah Palin. The flip side of all of this is that I personally think that the Tea Party was needed, at least as a sort of barometer for the current direction of the Republican Party. We as a party are directly responsible for the election of Barack Obama as president, having lost credibility with American voters. We became a party that was addicted to simply being in office and having the power associated with it. The voters rightfully called us on it. The 4-year term of President Obama has been the consequence of that. I'll leave you with this thought. A political party will lose its way as soon as it begins to try to fit all of the needs of the voters, this so-called big tent theory. Doing so will cause it to lose focus and direction and ultimately the trust of the voters. But don't take my word for it. Take Ronald Reagan's, who said a political party cannot be all things to all people. It must represent certain fundamental beliefs, which must not be compromised to political expediency or simply to swell its numbers. And with that, that's sort of been my view of the Tea Party this whole time. Now, Mike, you've actually had some pretty strong feelings regarding what the outcome of the Delaware Senate primary.
I just look at it as another rhino bites the dust.
Well, true. And as we have our own rhino here in Indiana with Senator Richard Lugar, who you, as I have mentioned in previous shows, have really taken a shine to, you know, really taken a heat to him on Hoosier Access. You take the heat basically to any and all rhinos.
Just call me the rhino hunter.
That's right. But honestly, and this is a question that I pose, not just to you, but to those listening. And I don't want it to come off as pragmatic, but it probably will. But when you view a state like Delaware, which is easily far to the left,
you got that Chesapeake Bay water.
The
Delmarva effect.
But you have a very left-leaning state, which surprisingly elected a Republican, not just once, but many times. Mike Castle was a very popular Republican.
Rhino. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm using air quotes.
Well,
here.
Didn't they also go with Ronald Reagan?
Yes, but in 1984.
Keep in mind, you know, 1984, the only state that went for Mondale was Washington D.C., which gets an electoral vote, and Minnesota.
Minnesota, and
that was Mondale's
home state, and it was only by 3,000 votes. But you're right, though, Christy, that Delaware did go for President Reagan in 1984, and they might have gone for one of the Bushes. I can't recall, in all honesty. But the thing is that, you know, Delaware is a left-leaning state. Rhode Island was a left-leaning state and elected a Republican in Lincoln Chafee many times. Also,
a rhino,
and also defeated.
But basically, I mean, once you get north of the Potomac, I mean, even the Republicans, we here in Indiana would call them Democrats.
Sure. So, but with all the flack that the so-called establishment, particularly Karl Rove, mm-hmm. has received over his comments.
You don't throw your nominee under the bus before the votes are counted.
She wasn't the nominee at the time. The votes hadn't been completely counted.
Well, it was a very sizable lead for her. I mean, coming from Rhode
Island. I think he did the same thing the next night on
But he did the same thing on Hannity the next... No, I mean, the Hannity radio show, not yes. the TV show. I know you don't listen to Hannity radio show, so...
I don't tend... you don't shockingly, I tend not to listen to talk radio, even though we have a talk radio show here on FTR Radio.
Yes. Well, that's how I spend my day at work when I'm not doing TPS reports On Thursdays and Fridays, I listen to golf.
Well, and you're also stuck with around a bunch of moon bats, aren't you?
A few moon bats, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Thank God I have satellite radio.
But here's
in my
the
office.
Thing. Here's a question that, you know, to Christy, to Mike, to the world, to the people listening. Should we expect a far right Republican like Christine O'Donnell, who thinks that the unspeakable word, which I will not mention on this show,
it was a if for
it was
those
an
who
word.
Aren't it, no, I was thinking it was about an episode of Seinfeld.
Yes, it was about it. It was, the bet.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's
anyway,
all we're going to do.
That's all we're
going to
do. But that even she thinks that
I think
it's
politicians
wrong?
Should keep their opinions about that to themselves. Really. I mean, it's not a voter's issue. It's not.
Well,
I mean,
apparently
the next thing we know, they're going to try to start legislating.
You know.
And regulating yes. such things as that.
I don't know. You get the impression that she actually does want to legislate on this. I mean, and I don't know. Frankly, I viewed it. I was no supporter of Mike Castles. But I viewed it as when he lost the primary, that we will probably lose Delaware as well. But we'll have to come back and talk about this in our fourth segment because we're going to be speaking with Greg Fedica, the Hoosier Patriots, right after this message. I hope you guys stick around because this conversation is only going to get better. We'll be right back.
All right, you people on the left and right coast, listen up. If you want to know what your fellow conservatives in the heartland of America, or as you call it, the flyover country, are thinking, go to your web browser and look at HoosierAccess.com. There you will find out what is on the mind of conservatives from the crossroads of America. HoosierAccess.com is the source for news, opinion, and commentary from conservative minds in the heartland. Add HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today. You can also follow at HoosierAccess on Twitter and HoosierAccess on Facebook and subscribe to this show and podcast forum on iTunes. That's HoosierAccess.com.
And welcome back to Gillespie. I'm really excited about our guest this evening. We have Greg Fedig, who is the co-founder of Indiana's Hoosier Patriots. It's the Hoosier Patriots organization, a Tea Party group here in Indiana. Greg recently was in Washington, D.C. and spoke at the 9/12 March sponsored by FreedomWorks. As you may recall, we spoke with Mark Warner last week, who was working with FreedomWorks. Hoosier Access was a sponsor of the 9/12 March. And I'm just pleased that we have Greg on. Greg has been influential in the Tea Party movement here in Indiana, has even been able to score some meetings with not just Indiana State GOP Chairman Murray Clark, but also on the national level with RNC Chairman Michael Steele. Greg, thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thank you, Josh. Good to be with you this afternoon.
Well, first of all, I want you to, if you wouldn't mind, give our listeners some background on yourself and the Hoosier Patriots.
Okay. Well, I am a lifelong resident of Indiana. I grew up in Tipton County, Purdue grad, own a small residential design build landscape firm in Hamilton County. And always been interested in politics in the sense that I like to kind of know what's going on worldwide, nationally, and certainly locally. But other than dutifully voting in every election, I didn't do much more with it. And was like most people, I would yell at the TV when I got upset, but kind of felt like one person couldn't do anything. And that all changed on April 15th, 2009, when I went to the Indiana State Capitol for the Tea Party tax rally there at the State Capitol.
Now, this is when Tea Party, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is when the Tea Party movement was really starting to kind of gain steam and become a national influence, correct?
Well, and actually, its birth date is on February 27th of 2009, and that's a little ironic because February 27th happens to be my birthday. So,
oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so I thought that was a little bit ironic. But on April 15th was really the first one Tea Party rally that occurred in Indiana. Those were all over in the state, but the one in Indianapolis had about, my estimate was probably about 7,000 to 8,000 people, although the press, as they do with all these rallies, underreported it. But I got to, in fact, I ran into State Representative Brian Bosman, had a good conversation with him there at that rally. And, you know, I went there really because I was concerned. It was 5:30 on a work day, middle of the week. And, you know, I didn't have to be in Indianapolis, but I made an effort to go down there. And I could have done other things, but I thought I really need to go there. And so afterwards, I felt a little inspired, and I started talking with a lot of friends, family, acquaintances about the concerns that, you know, most of us people in the Tea Party movement had with what's happened with the country, the bailouts, the debt, and all that. And really, from that point all through the summer, I felt like, at least in my circles of influence, that no one got it. And so much, in fact, that some of my family members, I felt they thought maybe I was being a reactionary, a little bit, you know, overboard on it. So didn't do anything with that until September 12th of last year, and I drove out to D.C. for that rally, not knowing really what to expect other than as that date got closer, I felt I was being pulled there. I had to go. And I was going to go if I had to walk. I just was going to go. So I drove through the night and out there and went 2 days prior and attended some grassroots seminars, Freedom Works and ResistNet and so forth. Well, then on the morning of, on September 12th of last year, when it came up out of the metro onto Pennsylvania Avenue, that was the first time that I wasn't alone anymore. I really felt that, had hope that with the size of that crowd, that, you know, we might actually save the republic. And then, it, as with all these other reports, that was grossly underreported. But most reliable sources now say there's about 1.5 million people. And then 2 weeks later, I ran into a gentleman from Warsaw, Indiana, that was at that rally as well, named Dan Lee. And we were on the FreedomWorks social blog site, our page, and that's how we connected. And we wanted to do something at that point. And so we started Hoosier Patriots. And it really, so we're not even a year yet. It was September 30th of last year when Hoosier Patriots was formed. And in less than one year, we're over 1,200 members within 18 total states, have hooked up with Freedom Works, Americans for Prosperity, gotten some invitations. As you said, I got to, in February, went out and met with Chairman Steele in that four-hour meeting. So we really have made a lot of inroads in the last year.
Have you started to see an expanded growth? I mean, are people starting to take the Tea Party more seriously? Just from your experience, I mean, what, I mean, frankly, the Tea Party has had a seismic effect, if you ask me, on American politics.
Yeah.
And, I mean, can I go back to that is, does your family still see you as a reactionary?
No, not at all. In fact, when I really thought, at least in my own personal experience, where it was making a difference, the day before the primary, Indiana's primary, and then the day of, I had no less than 24 people contact me, either by phone or email, asking me, and this is around the entire state, what my recommendation on who they should vote for. Now, I was honored and humbled by that, but I approached it. I'm not going to tell you who to vote for, but I will share with you this candidate's stand on these positions versus the other and let you make an informed decision. But I've never had that before, and in fact, of those couple dozen people, some of them had never voted until that point, and these were grown adults. So I knew that people started looking at me, and my thought is if it was happening with me, it was happening with Tea Partiers throughout the country, that they then become, and if you look at some of the polling like Rasmus and so forth, the Tea Party people have an influence on other people that would not necessarily call themselves Tea Partiers, but they sympathize with them, and they would say that the Tea Party or people are more informed than people in Congress themselves on the issues. So they're looking for us to have done the groundwork, the legwork on these issues, and then we boil it down to them to where it's not, you know, a 2,400-page health care bill. We boil it down to the nuts and bolts of, you know, what the issues are.
Wait, so Greg, you read the bill?
No, I read a lot of it, but I'm... One of the rallies I went out there in November with Michelle Bachman, and I'm incidentally counting my last trip last week, and I've been to D.C. 7 times in 1 year, and it's all for politics. But in last November, I went out there for Michelle Bachman's health care rally, and they threw two copies of that bill out to the crowd, and I caught page 324. And on it was fines, penalties, and... prison sentences, and I thought, well, now what's that got to do with health care? So that's how frightening that bill is. And but now,
and that was the page that you caught, and it was talking about prison sentences.
Yeah.
Fine. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So I thought, oh, that's it. Something to look forward to. So, but to answer your question, my family, my circle of influence, not a one of them would say they're Tea Party people. I'm the Tea Party guy, but they share our sympathies. They're going to vote the way we're going to vote. And yeah, I mean, they're upset. So, but if someone would interview them, they would say, no, I'm not in the Tea Party, simply because they're not involved in a group. But they, you know, for every one of us, I figure each active Tea Partier has at least 100 people that they could pull with them that shares the same sentiment. And in Indiana, the conservative but educated estimates on how many people are in Indiana that are actively involved in the Tea Party, it's roughly 30,000 people. So, you know, times that by 10 and or 100, we got a big chunk of the state. Certainly 10. I mean, if you did that by 10, that's a lot of people. And you're right, that's going to sway elections, and it's already evident. The Democrats have had to shift to the right, and the Republicans have had to shift even farther to the right. I mean, if nothing else more is achieved with the Tea Party movement, which we're not done by any stretch, that's monumental. I mean, we've caused American politics to have a monumental shift to the right.
Now, tell me, what has the organization of Hoosier Patriots been doing since your inception? I mean, what kind of meetings, what kind of events have you guys been doing that maybe listeners here in Indiana could participate in, and how can they contact you?
Okay, well, first, they can get on. To be a member of Hoosier Patriots, it's not a fee-based. You just sign up to receive our Monday morning newswire. Dan Lee, my co-founder, is a retired journalist, a conservative one at that.
They exist?
Yeah, there were a couple. So he does all our writing, and we do a publication that comes out every Monday, and it's called the Monday morning newswire. And that's free if you sign up. But one of the first things we started doing last October on one of the trips to D.C., I went out there and they kind of, well, in fact, we went into the Senate offices and we got to meet Evan Bayh by chance, and we asked him firsthand, there were eight of us from Indiana, if he was going to vote for the health care bill, and twice he told us no, and we saw how that worked out. But what we learned was a personal visit to their offices are the best, most effective. And then a phone call, then a written letter, they take more credence than a phone call, but then a phone call, then a fax, and then an email is the last. So they tally all that and then need to know how many people come out or contact and what the issues. So we took that and started going with a letter writing campaign. And what we do is Dan would write the letter, the topic, you know, what issue was of the week, and whether it be cap and trade, health care, what have you. And then of our 1,200 members, we were having about 600 to 700 then that they would print that letter, put their name in it, sign it, put in an envelope, address, and put stamps in and send it to Washington. So we were sending 600 to 700 letters per week to each of our senators and our representative. And among that was just our group. Now there's dozens and dozens in Indiana. They were taking the same initiative. And I'll have to say, you know, there's varying opinions why Evan Bayh announced his retirement, but he was getting about 3,000 to 4,000 letters a week from Indiana from Tea Partiers, putting the heat on him. And we went as far as coming up with campaign slogans we're going to use to defeat him, everything. I mean, we put a full-court press on him, and I even was told by a congressman, the word on the Hill was that he was felt so much pressure from home that he talked to the president and said, I can't blindly support you on everything. And 3 days later, he announced his retirement.
That's an incredible story.
Well, we believe he retired because he knew there was a chance he was going to be defeated. And if he had been defeated, that would have ended his career. So we're going to take a little bit of that credit as the Tea Party movement in Indiana. We haven't had a lot of victories in Indiana. Nationally, we have. But in Indiana, Evan Biden retired because he got tired of politics. He's going to come back for another day. I'm positive of that.
Yep. Well, we have come to the end of this segment. Greg, I want you to stick around here for one more segment because I want to talk to you about your 9/12 experience and okay, how that whole speech thing came about. I want everyone to stick around. We'll be right back with Greg Fettig.
Hey, fellow conservatives, when you're drinking your overpriced coffee or a Moco Choco, whatever, and the Wacko Latte at Starbucks, you ever feel like you're the only conservative in there? That's because you probably are. But don't feel bad, as you can annoy the bejesus out of those pesky Moonbat, New York Times, and Daily Coast reading liberals by reading HoosierAccess.com. At HoosierAccess.com, you can read the latest thought and opinion from conservatives in the crossroads of America. Annoy the Moonbats. At HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today.
And we're back with on Gillespie. I'm your host, Josh Gillespie. We are speaking with Greg Fettig, the co-founder of the Hoosier Patriots. I hope that you caught the last segment, because Greg's story of founding the Hoosier Patriots and his involvement is probably, Greg, I have a feeling there are a lot of people who were like you prior to the Tea Party movement. Just, you know, yeah, angry, would say things at the TV, but wouldn't necessarily think that they could do anything. And just, you know, 2 weeks ago, you were up on the Capitol steps addressing the latest 9/12 rally put on by FreedomWorks. How'd that come about?
Well, you know, first and foremost, Josh, I've told people in my journey, I'm not that good. And I'm very spiritual person, very, you know, have faith. And a lot of doors have opened for me that I can't really explain. And that was one of many that have. As I said earlier in the last segment, I've been to D.C. and that trip was number 7. None of it was for pleasure. It was business, and the business of trying to save the country. So I had when we went out last year, I made a commitment to FreedomWorks that we were going to go back again this year. And we were divided. Glenn Beck, we certainly admire and support him, but most of us can't do both. And we committed to FreedomWorks that we'd do that. So I stuck to that agreement. And we're self-funded for the most part. We've gotten very few donations, so we have to fund this out of our own pockets. And that's expensive, as I'm sure you'd realize. So I went out there and went 2 days again earlier than the event to attend some seminars. Well, when I got there, drove through the night, got to the hotel at 3:00 Thursday morning, and waiting on my email was an invitation from FreedomWorks to speak. And so it didn't take too long to come up with my answer on that. I was very grateful. And FreedomWorks, I don't know really how we ever hooked up with them. It was just by chance in January last year. They asked me to come out for a 2.5-day Liberty Leadership Conference. And from that point on, things just took off. And, you know, FreedomWorks has got really good long-term conservative roots. They're well over 1 million members nationally. So I hooked up with them, kind of took their seminars and offered to help wherever I could when they came through the Midwest. And it's just, it's taken off. And then that invitation to speak, I was totally unexpected. I thought I was going to be a member of the crowd. So in 1 year to go from a member of the crowd to being up on podium, it was quite an honor. It was very humbling. The crowd was much smaller than last year, and we expected that for one that Beck's thing took several hundred thousand people away from probably who would have come to this. But also last year we were upset, we were concerned, we were fearful with what's happened in the nation. This year, I think it was more of even the demeanor of the crowd was different. I call it a kind of a peaceful resolve. We knew that what we've done in the last year was effective, and we knew come November 2nd, there's going to be big changes in the country, and it's because of the hard work that everyone involved in the movement and so forth has done. So I got to go up there and introduce myself, my organization, and then read one of the planks on the contract from America, which is from a Tea Partier. Gentleman's name is Ryan Hacker out of Houston, Texas, and he's a Tea Party guy. he came up with that, and FreedomWorks is really a big sponsor and supporter of that. So I got to read one of the planks. I was only up there for about 4.5 minutes. I followed right behind Andrew Breitbart, which is pretty big shoes to have to follow.
Wait, so Andrew Breitbart opened for you? That's incredible.
Well, if you want to put it that way. Well, we'll leave it at that. But now he was up there, and then I had to come in right after him. And now after I walked off stage, Larry Gatlin was going to be up, the Gatlin brothers, and he jumped up and said, "Boy, I love you guys from Indiana. Some of my best songs were inspired by Hoosiers." So it was, yeah, it was fun. It was, and I was, as I said, I was humbled. My guesstimate of the crowd was probably more than 150,000, less than 200,000. But to be up there, to be one, you know, those are my peers. And I just felt humbled, and I was happy to do it. And it was a long, long day. That morning, we actually volunteered, was wearing the yellow shirt and the yellow volunteer hats, and we were at the Washington Monument running the hospitality tent there. And then once the parade started or the rally started at noon, had to get back to the hotel, change, then get back up to the Capitol for my 3:30 talk, and then left about 6 o'clock and drove 10 and a half hours back to Indiana. So
wow.
That was a long day.
So what was it like standing up there in front of so many people addressing them?
I only got about less than 5 minutes notice of what they wanted me to talk about. So I had to, in my mind, when they said you're going to get to introduce yourself in just a couple, you know, minutes real quick about what you've done and then take it from there. So I had to really formulate quickly what I was going to say, and I had no time to be nervous. So I went up there, you look out over a sea of people, but as I said, a year ago, I was out there looking at the speakers. So I just, to me, they were family, and I just talked that way. And it was gratifying. And real quickly, what I did, I introduced myself, and I was president, co-founder of Hoosier Patriots. And I told him about the story about Evan Bayh really quick. I said, in a nutshell, we convinced the sitting U.S. senator to see the wisdom in retiring rather than risk certain defeat in November. And that got tons of applause. I said that they'd be happy to know the Tea Party movement was alive and well in Indiana. So then I followed with Evan Bayh's story. And then I said, but we're not done yet. We fully intend to send at least 3 U.S. congressmen that voted for Obamacare and cap and trade to the end of a very long unemployment line, and that just got thunderous applause. Then I got to read the contract at the plank about the balanced budget amendment that we want to see enacted. And
I hope people heard you correctly, that it is a contract from America, not a contract for America.
I think the GOP is now running one with a contract with America, but this one's contract from America. It's us, you know, the average American. That's what we are sending up to them, and we want to see done.
Well, Greg, what does the future hold for the Hoosier Patriots? You know, with the November election just a little bit more than a month away, and I mean, and subsequent, I mean, if Republicans take over, what do we see? What do we see from the Hoosier Patriots going forward, and in essence, from the Tea Party?
Well, that's a great question. The talking heads would have you believe that even if we have sweeping wholesale change in Congress, then we're done. We're going to go away quietly. But the reason we find ourselves in this mess is we were complacent as Americans the last really 50 years. Our strength as being a trusting, good nation was also our weakness. We trusted the people we sent to Congress to work on our best behalf, and they've betrayed that trust and for selfish reasons. So we're going to have to hold their feet to the fire from this day forward. So we're going to have, I think, we're going to have at least 4 new faces from the Indiana delegation to Washington. And they may be our guys, but we're not going to let them rest. And in 2 more years, we're going to have another congressional election, and they're not going to stay if they're not going to act accordingly. So we have to constantly be vigilant. I believe it was Ronald Reagan said the price of freedom is constant vigilance, and you can lose that in one generation easily, and we're very close to having lost that if we haven't already. So we're responsible for that, and we're not going to go away quietly. 2 more years, the presidential election, as well as the House seats. So we have another senator from Indiana that's going to be up for election in 2 years. So, you know, we are.
There's a growing movement to get rid of him, and he's a Republican. at least in name only.
He's going to be sent to a long, well-deserved retirement. I'm almost positive of that. The Tea Party movement is not pleased with him, and he's not, you know, Dick Lugar is an honorable man, but he's been in Washington too long.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mike, our engineer, is singing your praises right now in agreement with everything you just said. Greg, real quick, how can people get a hold of the Hoosier Patriots? Give me your website, and where can they find you on Facebook and Twitter?
Okay, on our website's HoosierPatriots.org. We have a second organization I co-founded with an individual here in Hamilton County called AmericaRefocus.org. That's the next direction I believe the Tea Party movement's going to head, kind of getting faith-based in there. Now, my website, I'm Greg Fettig. I've got that's my Facebook, and that's all social, or all political, really. But then Hoosier Patriots is also on Facebook, and America Refocus is on Facebook.
Well, Greg, thanks for being on the show, and I want to have you on again when you get America Refocused, really going. I know that you had kind of your first meeting in August of last month, but I really want to have you back on to talk more about that and the direction that you're going to be taking with that and just the overall focus of that organization. But I thank you for being on the show this week. I thank you for being a leader in the Indiana Tea Party and for all that you've been doing. I got a chance to meet Greg even briefly at the post-party summit, which was put on by American Majority here in Indianapolis. And Greg is a fantastic individual and someone I think we'd all be lucky to know. Greg, again, thanks for being on the show, and we'll be talking to you again soon.
Thank you, Josh. Keep up the good work.
All right, and we'll be right back after these messages. And welcome back to Gillespie. We had the whole fourth segment already recorded, and there was a mishap. We're going to let the mishap go aside. So if we're going to record on Skype, so if you notice a different quality between the rest of the show and this part of the show, it's okay. We're still going to have an exciting portion. And we're going to continue what we were discussing before in the first segment about the Tea Party and the relevance between the candidates that they've chosen. And, you know, I made mention of Marco Rubio, Joe Miller, Sharon Angle, the Tea Party candidates who have won their primaries in states that Republican candidates probably have a chance to win. And my issue that I've taken with, for instance, Christine O'Donnell hasn't been so much that she's sort of a sketchy conservative or anything like that, but so much that she won a primary in a state where I don't think a far-right conservative can win. Whereas, you know, the Tea Party backed Scott Brown, and he was what you would expect. He's a Massachusetts Republican, and they were fine with that. But now we have Christine O'Donnell in Delaware, and will Republicans be able to actually win this seat? Many prognosticators say that if Mike Castle had won the primary, that the Republicans would have held the seat. Do I want Mike Castle in the Senate? No, I don't. But I also don't want a Democrat in that seat. Now, Mike, you'd probably argue that he's a Democrat anyway.
Exactly.
So, you know, I guess the question is, do we want full-on Dem, or do we want Dem light?
I don't think there is much of a difference between the Democrats and Mike Castle. Other than maybe the first vote he would cast at the beginning of the session for the leadership. Besides that, no.
But what about Supreme Court justice votes? I mean,
those scare me. Look at Richard Lugar here in Indiana, and his votes for Supreme Court.
I hear you, Mike. But I mean, the thing is that Indiana, Delaware isn't Indiana. Indiana is a state where you could have Richard Lugar primaried, and he'd probably lose at this point, and the person who beat him in the primary would probably win a Senate seat. Delaware is not that kind of state.
Well, then again, Massachusetts did have Mitt Romney at one time. I mean,
as governor. As governor, he instituted the first, he introduced Romney Care, which was a precursor to Obamacare.
True. I'm just saying, though,
But does anyone call Mitt Romney a squishy Republican? I mean, besides
that one.
I call
him a squishy Republican. The guy flip-flops left and right like it's in style. Like he got him at Old Navy. I mean, I guess this is the problem, and this is the reason why I understand that the Tea Partiers are upset, because we want people who will stick to their principles.
We do. We want principled candidates, and anything less is pretty much unacceptable. And I think a lot of this is about reforming the Republican Party as much as anything, and that only true conservatives are acceptable. Period.
But Christy, and I totally understand where you're coming from, but can we expect a true conservative, someone like Christine O'Donnell, she's clearly a true conservative, can we expect her to win in a very blue state?
Anything can happen at any time.
This is a question I posed to you guys. Is there
something?
Oh, we lost Christy there for a second. Say that again, Christy.
Scott Brown ran on a very conservative platform, much more so than what he is voting. And I think a lot of people were surprised.
I don't know if they were necessarily surprised. Okay, go ahead.
Conservative expectations. I think people had more conservative expectations of Scott Brown than what he proved to be. And perhaps that, you know, he was elected successfully more conservative than, you know, he's playing out.
Okay, I see what you're talking about. He played a conservative card, but at the same time, when he cast his... Mike, the one thing that you had brought up in the previous segment that was reported was that Scott Brown was elected to be the 60th vote.
Right. To take out the 60th vote that the Dems had, so we would have some leverage over the operation of the Senate.
But now that we see that the Senate is within reach of becoming Republican...
It is now, but it wasn't back then.
Well, true, but now that it is, wouldn't it be foolish, in a sense, to have a nominee who can't win a seat when it was winnable by someone who is more moderate? I mean, all of a sudden we've handicapped ourselves in being able to win a seat in the name of ideological purity.
Well,
he's not.
Mike Castle was far from ideologically pure. That is true. He wasn't. I'm sorry to cut you off, Christy, but you kind of dropped out again. But do you see where I'm coming from, though?
For one thing, the party's been hijacked by the rhinos, and it's for far too long. We've been looking at, well, we'll put this person in just because he has the little letter R by his name. That makes him good. No, we're done with that. That's what got us into this mess in the first place back in 06.
Yeah, I see your point. And I guess this is where I think that that we as a party, that we as a nation, independents, Democrats, Republicans, I mean, we want to elect people who are ideologically pure to our values, whether you're full-on Republican or you're full-on Democrat. But, you know, that's not how Washington works. If you're going to have some compromise, you do need to find some people who are somewhat in the middle. Is the problem compromising?
Well, the thing comes about is the left has gone so far off to the left, and I don't think we've gone further off to the right. We've been right, and we're staying right. It's the left that has gone way in the hell out in left field, somewhere left of Lenin. And they're not willing to budge, and we're going, hey, we're not going to make that march to the left. We tried that and failed miserably.
Well, Christy, I think you had brought up before that we actually have, even as a party, been moving more towards the right. And I don't say that in a negative way. If anything, that the candidates that have been elected, you know, the Marco Rubios, the Joe Millers, the Sharon Angles, you know, they have, if they won, they would definitely be moving the party more towards the right. Christine O'Donnell won, they'd be moving the party more towards the right and away from leftist ways that we were going, Mike, as you say, in 2006.
Well, look at, you're
squishy moderates or your people down the middle, your bridge builders, whatever you want to call them in the Republican Party, your John McCain's, your Bob Doles, even your Dick Lugers, they're like, well, we need to bring everyone together into a big circle and sing kumbaya. No,
well,
we're done with that.
My mom, even Ronald Reagan says you can't do that.
Party, and part of the Tea Party issue is we do view this as we're at war. You know, we, and I know that sounds really extreme and harsh and everything, but my God, I feel like, we do feel like the Republic is slipping right through our fingers and moving into a socialist, statist, communist, whatever you want to call it, but it is clearly leaving the founding principles, and we, and draft.
Well, in the
I'm not talking about picking up arms. I'm talking about utilizing this great institution that we have.
Exactly. You're not talking about physical warfare.
Well, not yet, but exactly. You know, we still have faith in the ballot box.
Yes.
And I'm talking about the drastic measures at the ballot box, and
yes,
that we are getting people excited and up and out and voting, and conservatism is sexy again.
Well, just like 2008, all of us that was anywhere near a polling place, I mean, oh, wow, we have one of us running for, that's going to be the next president of the United States. I got to go support him. And we had here in Marion County 57% turnout and out and 1.5 hour lines of people waiting to vote.
Well, no, you're talking about Democrats, right?
Well, of course.
Because clearly Republicans didn't have that. We didn't have one of us running for president.
No,
maybe vice president, but not for president.
Oh no, but I'm just saying. I'm just talking about long racial lines.
Yeah. I guess the problem that we all have to face. I mean, it's the reality is that Washington is a very pragmatic place, and I think that's why we have an unfortunate, you know, the leadership that we do. I know that there are a lot of conservatives who are frustrated with the Senate leaders like Mitch McConnell, and wish they had more people like Jim DeMint or Tom Coburn. And you know, Tom Coburn is my favorite senator. His name is Dr. No. And frankly, he's been more of a conservative. He's been more of a behind-the-scenes conservative leader, whereas Jim DeMint has been out front. And you know, I guess it's one of the reasons that I like Tom Coburn so much is that he hasn't been one to be wanting to take the credit for everything. But, you know, I wish we did have more Tom Coburns. And I think Christine O'Donnell would be a Tom Coburn type. I don't know. My struggle is that, again, she's won a primary in a state where she most likely won't win.
Says who?
If Mike Castle had won the primary, the Republicans would probably have that. And so at what point is there a point where we have to say, you know what, we need the numbers and we hope the ideology catches up?
We can get the numbers from elsewhere.
Well, I guess the GOP can say
that. Oh, we lost you, Christy.
Oh.
Well, here's the thing. Is that this is definitely a conversation that we need to continue having, and I think that it's good that we're having it. You know, Christine O'Donnell is the winner in Delaware, and I will support our GOP ticket. And if she's on and she's part of the ticket, I'm going to support that ticket. You know, I will go all Karl Rove on her. I may question some of her views and beliefs, but
well, you knew as soon as
at the heart of it, she is a conservative, and I think she would govern conservatively, and that's what we want in our leadership.
Well, you knew as soon as all this came about, the Moonbats would dig up every little piece they could, and of course, you know, Bill Maher's as big as a Moonbat as they get, and they found this piece
this
on her about.
We'll have to continue discussing for another episode because I'm sure we could take an entire show and just talk about this, but we've come to the end. We've come to the end, unfortunately. But we've had a great show. I want everybody to stick around because Aaron Proctor is going to be following us directly right after that. Then you got Duke Over America, then Jenny Erickson, and ending the evening with the Armchair Energist. I thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Gillespie and FTRradio.com. Thanks for dealing with our Skype segment. Christy, thanks for being on the call. Mike, thank you for taking care of the recording aspects and making everything run. And we'll see you guys next week here on FTRradio.com. I am Josh Gillespie. Talk to you later.